Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
For 12 years, Harold would brush each of his 32 teeth 76 times. 38 times back and forth, 38 times up and down. Every weekday for 12 years, Harold would tie his tie in a single Windsor knot instead of the double, thereby saving up to 43 seconds. His wristwatch thought the single Windsor made his neck look fat, but said nothing.
Welcome to Rewatchability. It's the podcast where we rewatch old movies and see how they hold up today in the modern eye, in this world that we live in.
What a world. What a world.
I'm Robert LaRonde. With me, as always, is...
Lane Waters.
And we're here. We're back. It's been a while.
We're kind of here. We're apart, but together.
That's true. That's right. The way things must be at this particular moment in time, we are not in the studio. I don't know if people know this, because it's an audio podcast, but we record in a studio in a big, tall, like, building on Queen Street in Toronto. It's very fancy. Now we've gone back to recording in our basement or closets or the sort of places that we used to record years ago.
Yeah, so, with less technology than we had back then.
A lot less technology. So obviously the audio quality isn't going to be as crisp or clear as it usually is, but we want to thank you for listening, and we're just glad to be talking to you guys again.
Yeah, I mean, we missed you. I don't know if you missed us, but we've been jonesing. We've been jonesing for a little bit of movie commentary.
That's right. Because, I mean, I don't know. I know everybody's situation is different, but I've had nothing but time on my hands. And I have, like, rewatched some things.
Wait, what have you been rewatching, Rob?
I mean, there's just, like, a lot of crazy things. But, we can talk about a little bit of it.
Yeah, we can talk about a little bit of it. I rewatched all the Lord of the Rings movies.
Oh, my God, really?
Yeah, I think they were the extended cut, too, because they were long. They were just so long. Yeah.
And did it do the trick? Did it successfully kill, you know, days?
It killed my will to live a little bit.
Man.
They were all so right. It's too long.
You're not suggesting that we talk about Lord of the Rings for the podcast, entire trilogy?
I'd love to. If someone else out there wants us to do that, I'd do that. I'd also...
Let's not give them any ideas.
I feel like making you live my pain of watching the extended versions would be really great.
Well, sometime we'll have to, because it's a pretty big cultural touchstone for everybody. So one day I'm sure we'll get to it. But we're not here to talk about Lord of the Rings, the movie that we are here to talk about this week and next week. So you'll have time to watch this along with us if you like, is Stranger Than Fiction, the 2006 movie directed by Mark Forrester. Blaine, when was the first time that you saw Stranger Than Fiction?
I think I saw it in theaters because it seemed to be like, you know, one of those quirky, very unique movies at the time. Though I remember like the trailer thinking that it was like a really cool idea back in, I think it was 2005, and thinking that it was going to be kind of like an Eternal Sunshine type movie.
Right.
You know, like this is a comic actor doing his best drama performance. And this is a cool, hotshot new screenwriter, because I was getting into screenwriting at the time. So like this script was like a hot sell and everyone was vying for it. And this guy, he was a playwright, but he had done like a TV movie of the week before this. So this was like a big deal in the screenwriting. So it was just a big thing. And I was really into kind of everything behind it at the time. And so I really wanted to see it. And then when I saw it, I remember being like, that was all right. That was a movie. That was an okay movie. I felt like it was a little slow. It was a little predictable at the time. I was comparing it to Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. So I feel like...
Well, how can you not?
I feel like that might have been a little unfair.
Uh-huh.
But I do remember liking it okay. It just wasn't... I never saw it again after I saw it the first time until now. And it was poised to be one of my faves from everything, from my excitement going into it. But I remember it not delivering. But watching it this time, I have a few different thoughts on it. So I'm excited to get into it for next week. What about you, Rob?
Yeah, I don't actually remember when the first time I saw it was. I think I came from a similar place as you. I mean... At the time that this was released, we were sort of all in the throes of our love for Charlie Kaufman, because he'd done Being John Malkovich, he'd done Adaptation, like a 1-2 punch, and when Eternal Sunshine came out, it just sort of cemented him as like, you know, one of the best and most interesting screenwriters that there were. And they always use like the metafiction, and, you know, sometimes they would break the fourth wall, or Charlie Kaufman himself would sort of pop into the story. So, I mean, at that time in my life, which was like, you know, the early 20s, I was super fascinated with all of that stuff. And so I did see it. And also, I should mention that in the context of, yeah, funny people doing sad movies, this was part of like a trend that had been going on. Like, I think it probably started with Bill Murray in Lost in Translation, which isn't exactly metafictional, but, you know, has nods of metafictionality because he's playing an actor, a washed up actor. And, you know, we're sort of getting like... We're expecting that we're getting the real Bill Murray malaise through this character. So it is sort of like the same. And then like that became a thing where former comedic actors or SNL alumni did these sort of melancholically quirky, funny movies. So like Adam Sandler in Punch Drunk Love, and of course Jim Carrey. And it's sort of just become like a thing. And this was Will Ferrell's sort of entry into it. And also at the time, I wasn't a big Will Ferrell fan. His sort of rise had come with the sort of frat boy comedies, which I wasn't a big fan of. I sort of remembered him from like Night at the Roxbury, so I thought he was a little bit of a hack. And then, you know, he sort of grew on me after seeing this movie. Though, like you, I thought it was a little bit light. Like, it didn't have the sort of depth that a Charlie Kaufman film had. It didn't sort of like go into the interesting stuff. It didn't sort of play with the conventions or with the metafictional elements in the way that he did. And so, yeah, I was also disappointed because I wanted it to be something which it was not.
Yeah. So I remember thinking he had such little contact with his own author. And that was the most interesting part of the story. It wasn't the fact that someone was narrating over him. It was the fact that he got to talk to someone who was creating his life. And that's so interesting. And that's like two scenes in this entire movie.
Yeah, they have like a minute of screen time. It's like Heat, you know? It's like, were they even on the same set? Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I remember being disappointed like that. But I also remember Will Ferrell starring in it. And like you, I didn't like Will Ferrell. I don't know about you, but I was kind of growing out of the SNL movies at the time. Like, I was wanting more serious fare, and I was getting into filmmaking stuff. So I really wanted something that would kind of challenge the status quo and bring like originality to it. And I was like, will Ferrell be that person? Like, that didn't seem to me that he could do it. And I remember thinking at the time, like back then, after watching, being like, well, I was right, you know.
Like, right.
Which might
you smug son of a bitch.
Exactly, exactly. Like, that might be unfair, and we'll get into that next week. But.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely a stretch for him. And I think, you know, this was the sort of role that was that actors like him were taking that were like a stretch for the comedic role. And now it's sort of like par for the course for, you know, somebody funny to do something that is darker or sadder or has like, you know, some sort of melancholy to it. But at the time, it was sort of new and interesting. And this is also like it is different than the Charlie Kaufman movies in that it's not mired in its despair. Like, it manages to look at the world and it doesn't, you know, want to crumble or dig itself into the earth. It sort of, you know, it sort of like, you know, chooses yes. Right. Which was why I sort of wanted to talk about this movie, because it's positive and, you know, times being what they are, not to hammer that nail too hardly, but I really wanted something positive. And I watched this a few weeks ago with my ex-girlfriend because we'd just broken up and I was getting ready to move out, but there was the whole crisis. And so we still had to spend a lot of time together. And
there's a movie right there. Like, that is a movie in and of itself. Like, having broken up with your girlfriend and then being quarantined in with her. Be like, oh, God, no.
And that's Stranger Than Fiction.
Well, it's interesting because we'll talk about whether the title of this movie delivers on its promise. But the thing, I rewatched Contagion. I don't know if you did that as well. But
no.
My sister-in-law said, you know, this is a cathartic movie. You got to watch this. And it was right when things were really hitting the fan. And I was like, okay, this would be great. So me and my wife watched it. And I feel like it might have been cathartic for her. And I just, like, stayed up all night being, like, looking at the numbers. Being like, I gotta, oh, man, if I have to, like, fend people off at a truck doling out MREs.
Yeah. Like, can I take a life?
will I be able to be Jason Bourne? So, but watching that and then living through the times that we're living through, it does, that idiom, Stranger Than Fiction, does feel like it holds, because it's not like the people in the movie Contagion, you know, they were really afraid of this virus and getting it. So they were in fear all the time and tried to protect themselves from it. Unlike a small, very small subsect of society now, which is like protesting and going out and
actively
almost trying to get it. So you're like, what? That is stranger than anyone
stranger
saw. Like, there was a tweet that I read saying the thing that zombie movies missed was that someone in the middle of a zombie movie would be standing there being like, there are no zombies.
It's a hoax. Yeah. I think somebody mentioned it's like Independence Day, where, like, you know, the aliens are coming and everyone's afraid, but there's like this one group of people who's having a party on top of the building.
Right. Yeah. It's just like, guys, I don't know, maybe seek underground shelter. But
the other thing about this whole crisis that is stranger than fiction is that in fiction, like, everybody is scrambling, everybody's concerned, like, there's always stuff to do. For us, like, the crisis here is that we've run out of episodes of The Office to watch, and I watched 30 Rock 3 months ago, and Brooklyn Nine-Nine I've gone through. So all of my comedies, I have...
Horrible, you know. Horrible, Rob.
It's real tough out here.
God, get this man 2 cc's of television, stat.
I mean, it's just like, for most of us, those of us who aren't, you know, out there on the front lines, who aren't working in healthcare or, you know, keeping the world running, I mean, it's just kind of waiting. It's a pause. It's boring, you know? We're just sort of like, you know, and that's the Stranger Than Fiction part, is that I'm like, you know, should I go for a walk today, or will I die?
Right.
Or should I just stay in and have crap dinner? I don't know, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, I mean, it's weird that, also bringing back to the movie, that most of this movie is about a writer writing about a very, very boring man.
And, yeah.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
And that's what we're experiencing in what is normally a very exciting time in a TV show or movie, and exciting, you know, the awful is in there. But we're just experiencing the constant horrible boredom of it because we're not heroes. So we're not out there helping the world.
Well, in a sense, we're heroes providing podcasts. You know, there could be a doctor or a nurse who's listening to this on their way to work and is like, fuck this shit. I have lives to save. Why am I listening to this?
Well,
I thought it was an optimistic movie, and it has like the hope, you know, that things are going to get back to a better place. Like, you know, his life is boring. He's not really happy with it. He's been living this sort of existence, which is, you know, just repetitive. And, you know, he has control, which he likes, but he doesn't have love or happiness. And, you know, with the intervention of the author's voice, he has a chance to find those things, to be happy. And so I thought maybe, like, there could be a chance after all of this for us to be happy, for some optimism, for, you know, some, like, the world's going to get back to a place where it is good and life will go on. And we just have to keep holding out until then. That's, you know, that's what I'm going for. Admittedly, when I thought about this last week, I had a little bit more of the hope in me.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there is, and this movie and every movie kind of tells the same story of you have to go through great pain and great trial and tribulation in order to change, in order to grow. And this movie does the same thing. And I hope that that life doesn't copy movies in terms of like the disaster scenario, but that it copies that trajectory of, you know, after this, maybe we're better with the environment. Maybe people don't go like commute to work every day and they can work from home a little bit. And maybe you don't have to fly to another state for that meeting. You can just do it on Skype or Zoom and get Zoom bombed by someone showing you their penis on the same meeting.
It's a better world.
Yeah, it could be a better world. We could use this disaster to create something great. And we're also trying out universal basic income, which is a great way to like bring people out of poverty. So like, there's a hopefulness to this horribleness that's happening right now. And I agree with you. This movie is the kind of blue sky version of a Charlie Kaufman movie for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think,
and whether that's for better or worse, we'll talk about that next week.
Yeah. But I think because I was like in 2005, I was in my one of my last years of university, and I was pretty depressed, so I don't think that I wanted the blue sky back then.
Right.
I think I wanted the Charlie Kaufman, like, burn it all down. I'm a homunculus of a person. And
for sure. You know. And I think there's also the sense when you're young that, like, only suffering can be meaningful, right?
Yeah.
And so to, like, get past suffering is to, you know, maybe numb yourself from something that is worth exploring.
Yeah. Do we want
to? Anyway, then you realize that's bullshit. I just want to be happy, man.
Yeah.
I just want a Maggie Gyllenhaal in my life.
I just want to be able to buy a girl flowers, you know? I love that pun in the movie, but I feel like if I were to do that in real life, it would be such like a backwards gift. It would be like, can you bake me something?
Yeah, I know. No. I mean, there are definitely some like gender politics stuff to talk about in this movie.
Oh, and we'll I can't talk wait to get into that. Yeah, for sure.
On next week's episode as well.
Should we go into kind of like where the world was at this time?
Yeah, I mean, I was just about to suggest that this movie was released in 2006, and I have some facts about 2006 for you.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, did you know there's a Manfred Mann and the Earth Band album called 2006?
I didn't, and I'm a better man for knowing now, so that's great.
Okay, so one major movie event in 2006 was that Walt Disney Company bought Pixar from Lucasfilm for $7.4 billion, officially making Pixar a subsidiary of Walt Disney Pictures.
My God, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, remember that first Toy Story was like a co-pro, right? Like they did it together, but they weren't really, you know, they were friends with benefits, but not in a relationship.
And then what is the buyout in relationship parlance?
I don't know.
Is this like a messy divorce where one gets the kids?
Yeah, and it's like, you know,
I'll take your whole life from you.
Oh my God. Marriage Story.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
What else happened? Okay, so North Korea claimed to have conducted its first ever nuclear test.
Okay, that started the whole kind of penis measuring contest between the North Korea and the States a little bit.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. And as it continues, assuming Kim Jong-un is still alive. Also, speaking of dictators, it was on November 5th, former president of Iraq, Saddam Hussein, who has had his moment in the movie Spotlight. Let's talk about Hot Shot sometime. He was sentenced to death by hanging.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, I mean, Hot Shots maybe isn't the best. Isn't the best to talk about his demise, but yeah, that's pretty good.
Remember that guy had like all those he had all those impersonators because he was so afraid of people assassinating him, and then that became a plot point on Arrested Development,
right?
Because they bought homes from Saddam Hussein, or sold homes to him.
I mean, that was already the plot to a movie too. Can't remember. Anyway, it was. Just trust me on that. I don't have a computer in front of me to look it up. I do. The Human Genome Project publishes the chromosome sequence, which is pretty cool. No,
that's cool.
That gives the gateway to like a lot of.
I have the pocket chromosome sequence.
That's good.
Anything else?
Oh man, just a whole bunch of horrible things. You know, reading the past is not the best because the highlights are all the worst things that happened that year.
Well, someday somebody's going to be like 2020. Okay, so COVID-19, you know, wreaked havoc all over the world and screwed up our economic system, everything like that. The Trolls movie came out and made $100 million.
Yeah, exactly. There were bushfires that almost engulfed all of Australia, but also there was the disaster known as Cats. So, oh man,
so, everything's terrible. Everything's terrible.
Nothing evened out. There was no evening out. It was just a horrible decline.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about before we wrap up the mini episode?
How you doing? You okay over there? You going for walks?
I'm going for walks. I'm staying alive. I've been, watching a lot of TV. Oh yeah, I've been rewatching Deadwood because I'm finally going to get around to watching the Deadwood movie, and it's so good. And also, what I love this time is seeing all the actors who I didn't realize were in Deadwood. Like, I didn't realize that Veronica Mars was in Deadwood.
What?
I didn't realize that the Borg Queen was in Deadwood.
Oh,
I didn't
man.
Realize that Drunk Steve is the warden from the first season of Orange is the New Black. It's so good. I really love it. And it's fantastic. So I'm burning through that. And I'm also not rewatching because I hadn't seen it yet. But I feel like I'm rewatching because all my favorite characters are there. Finally got around to watching Better Call Saul, which is so good. And I just love... like the relationship between Michael McKean and Bob Odenkirk. It's so good. Have you watched that?
They're brothers in that, right? I've seen the first season when it first came out, which I think it's on its fifth or sixth season now.
Yeah, I think so. I tried to watch the first season as well when it first came out, and there wasn't enough action for me to catch. But
yeah.
I've been watching it, and I just love that relationship, and all the actors are great, and it's such a great showcase for character actors. Like, we get all of these people who some of them are in Breaking Bad, and they come back, like Hector Salamanca. He gets like to do so much great stuff. And of course, there's like the guy who plays Mike Ehrmantraut. He's basically like the second character. I just love watching it. I can't wait to I want the show to finish so I can rewatch Breaking Bad, and then I can watch the Breaking Bad movie. I'm like, I'm in.
So you haven't again. Seen the Breaking Bad movie yet?
Not yet. Not yet.
OK, that's interesting.
Is it? I'm assuming it's not super great.
It's just. When I'm not going to say anything about the movie itself, but the risk that man took in making a movie after making like a complete series, like Breaking Bad feels complete. There's nothing else that I need to know in mm-hmm. that world, and it's one of the best TV shows of all time. He's like, I think I'm going to make a movie, which you know doesn't really fit the form factor of what I made before, and it's going to be. It's going to like kind of fly in the face of the completeness of the show. And
right.
It just felt like, I was like, that's just asking for it to be not great. But,
yeah.
But
for sure.
My expectations, the movie was completely different than my expectations. So,
oh, okay. Well, that's interesting. Well, that's what I sort of think about Better Call Saul. I mean, if you made one of the greatest TV shows of all time, you wouldn't be like, you know, maybe we should give a drama series to the guy from Mr. Show.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Maybe we should do a spinoff of like Tony Soprano's mom in her early years. You're just like, no.
Well, they're doing a Sopranos prequel with
of course they are.
James Gandolfini's kid is playing the Tony Soprano part.
God, no.
I mean, he looks the part, but you know, yeah.
Yeah. Damn.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to say is they are they had to stop making it, but they were like 20 days into making the Lord of the Rings TV show for Amazon Prime. Mm. So we might want to do the Lord of the Rings at some point, rewatch them to prepare for the TV
absolutely.
Show that's going to come out that they spent $1 billion on just almost acquiring the rights. So
as long as we don't have to watch all the Hobbits, because I don't have time for that shit, even though I have literally all the time in the world.
Because no one has time for all those songs. There's nobody. I haven't seen them. But I'm not going to. Anyway, this has been great, Rob. I'm glad we finally we got to do this again.
Me too. And thank you, all of you out there, for joining us again. And we hope you'll watch Stranger Than Fiction with us and join us again next week. And we'll talk about this movie and we'll get through this thing together. The podcast, I mean. I don't know about the COVID. That might get us. I don't know.
And if you watch the movie, you know, you can have you're going to have your own opinion about whether we're right or wrong on that movie because it's just fresh in your mind. And then you can argue with us on Twitter, which is the place to argue. And mm-hmm. we'd love it. We'd love it if you joined us there.
You can also find us on Facebook and engage with us there. You can download the podcast on Apple Podcasts and subscribe, and you can rate us and leave a review if you would like. There's also, if you'd like to support us, the Patreon, which is the thing where you give us $135 a month, and that helps keep the podcast running. And in return, you get the podcast early and some other perks. And you can also buy a t-shirt from tpublic.com/rewatchability, I think. It's been a long time since we've done this.
Yeah, the t-shirts there even? Did they use them to make masks? We don't know. We don't know.
I think that TeePublic did have like a thing where you could buy masks of like, you might be able to buy a rewatchability mask. I think that would be, if you do that, please take a picture of yourself wearing a rewatchability mask.
Oh, God.
But don't do it from a distance of 6 feet from anybody else.
Hi, I'm Kimberly, producer at Entertainment One's Podcast Network. When I'm waiting in line for a coffee or catching up on housework, I love a new podcast. Decode the mysteries of UFOs with Somewhere in the Skies. Or if you're feeling risque, check out Turn Me On for a no-holds-barred conversation on sexuality and relationships. You can listen to all of Entertainment One's podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.